The Congressional Redistricting Subcommittee will come to order. Kyle, please call the roll.
Chair Saroy.
Here.
Vice Chair Tuck.
Here.
Ranking Member Skidmore.
Here.
Representatives Beltran.
Here.
Benjamin.
Here.
Brown. Brown. Fabricio.
Here.
Fetterhoff.
Here.
Fisher.
Here.
Gio Lombardo.
Here.
Harding.
Here.
Hunchowski.
Here.
Joseph. Joseph. Masullo.
Here.
Morales.
Present.
Perez.
Here.
Plakin.
Here.
Silvers, excused. Toledo.
Here.
Trabolsi.
Here.
Williamson.
Here.
Quorum is present, Mr. Chair.
Thank you very much, Kyle. Members, good morning. A few reminders before we begin. Please silence all electronic devices, and if you wish to make a public comment and did not fill out a form online before the meeting, please fill out a form now and turn it in to the sergeant staff. Also, as a reminder for our members and presenters, please ensure that you turn on your microphone when you're speaking and turn it off when you are finished. Members, redistricting is a once-in-a-decade process. I am honored that Speaker Sprouls and Chair Leake have entrusted me with this responsibility to serve as chair of the Congressional Redistricting Subcommittee, and I look forward to working with each of you throughout this process. I'd like to first and foremost thank Vice Chair Tuck and Ranking Member Skidmore, who will be my partners in spearheading this process, and I look forward to working with you both. I would now like to introduce our redistricting staff. Jason Parida is our chief map drawer. Karen Dearden is our external affairs chief, and Kyle Langan is our policy analyst. We have a few additional team members that are at the other subcommittee meeting this morning, and they include Staff Director Lita Kelly, Policy Analyst Sam Wagoner, and DJ Ellerkamp, our Administrative Assistant. As you look around at your fellow committee members and those of the Redistricting Committee and our other subcommittee, you will realize that we have over 50% of the House, that's 62 members, involved in this committee process. We also have all four corners of the state represented, all the way from the Panhandle to Northeast Florida, to the I-4 corridor, and to South Florida and the Keys, with urban and rural areas represented. Members, Chair Lee gave a similar educational presentation during yesterday's Big Redistricting Committee. I will be presenting some similar information today because I feel it's important to ensure all of our committee have the same foundational knowledge as we move forward in this process. And on a personal note, I'd like to add, this is my first chairmanship, so please bear with me if there's any bumps and bruises along the way. The last time we met on the House map was 2012. Fast forward 10 years, and the vast majority of the House of Representatives is new to redistricting, including myself. So I want to start by giving some context. While the House map was constitutionally upheld in 2012, there were successful court challenges to both the congressional plan and the Senate plan throughout the subsequent years. It is important to remember that during the 2012 redistricting cycle, the members and staff were implementing two brand new substantial constitutional amendments. They did not have the benefit of historical reference or court precedent to guide them through their process. However, we do. The Speaker and Chair Leake have made it consistently and abundantly clear that the House of Representatives will conduct this process in compliance with the Florida Constitution and relevant federal and state legal standards, including relevant court precedent. Now, I want to point out that only five members in our entire chamber were part of the last redistricting cycle, and only three of them were with the House of Representatives. That creates a noteworthy responsibility for our committee to undertake a thorough educational effort to ensure that everyone has the understanding that they need to be able to propose, analyze, and most importantly, vote on legally compliant boundaries. Throughout our initial committee meetings this fall, we're going to build this foundational knowledge for members of the committees, including such things as the methodologies that guide how we draw and analyze districts, and the related policy decisions that we will face as we draw and debate boundary lines, and that time will come. The subcommittee's first lesson begins today with an explanation of redistricting terminology and an overview of the United States Census Bureau. We will also demonstrate for you the new website that was launched yesterday that contains important resources for you and your constituents. And that website is floridaredistricting.gov. In subsequent committee weeks, we will train members in our map drawing software. This training will teach members how to use the software to draw districts, how to use the reporting tools to analyze what you drew, and how to activate advanced tools within the software to make drawing as efficient as possible. We will also provide members with an understanding of the legal landscape surrounding redistricting. This landscape will be true to established law, not third-party interpretation. And then, once that foundational understanding is established across our committees, we will begin workshopping maps. It is critical for members to understand how these activities and decision points may interact with one another and how they should be weighted when considering where boundary lines are placed. Without proper context for members to understand the issues and standards, we are not properly preparing ourselves to take votes on compliant district lines. Redistricting is a precise and technical process, and creating this framework is also consistent with Speaker Sproul's approach of education, training, and preparation. Before we get into the substance of today's meeting, I want to address a couple of additional items. Members, first, let's talk about record retention. The House of Representatives continues to urge all members to retain all records related to redistricting. These records can include documents and correspondence, including emails and texts, regardless of whether they were sent or received on your public or personal devices or accounts. The House also continues to urge all members to avoid private conversations about redistricting with individuals who have a vested interest in the outcome of this process, and to keep their comments about the redistricting process in alignment with the constitutional standards that apply to redistricting plans. If you have any questions regarding this process or this guidance, please reach out to the House General Counsel's office. Next, I want to address committee procedures. While the redistricting subject matter may be new to many of you, the filing of bills and amendments will follow traditional House procedures we are all familiar with. If you wish to submit a map as a bill, it will count towards your bill allotment, and you are subject to the submission and filing deadlines. If you wish to amend a committee work product or another member's bill, those amendments will be heard through the standard committee process and are subject to the same respective deadlines. As members of our subcommittee, we will propose and analyze maps in our committee of jurisdiction, and we will then pass those maps on to the full redistricting committee for consideration. Members, the last thing I'll touch on is expectations for map submissions. As I've mentioned, the House of Representatives expects transparency in how input for our work product is received, reviewed, and considered. You should not be naive to the fact that external entities and individuals want to influence this process in a way that may not be compliant with the law. Similar to the House of Representatives' high standards for lobbyist disclosures, the goal of transparency is to bring awareness to the process of individuals who may be trying to assert their undue influence into our process. If you choose to submit a map as a part of this redistricting process, you should be prepared to disclose any and all individuals who assisted you in creating the map. Similarly, submissions by members of the public will be accompanied by a form inquiring about groups or individuals with whom they collaborated and whether any form of compensation was received in return for comments and submissions. The work we have ahead of us is exciting, but we cannot overlook the gravity of what we are charged to do. It is quite an undertaking. This important work occurs every 10 years, and it's worth noting that the legislature only has two constitutional obligations: to pass a budget and to redistrict. And we should all be honored to carry out this responsibility, and I look forward to working with you all in the task ahead to produce legally compliant maps that will well serve the people of Florida. I'd like to pause here for any initial questions. If there are no questions, we will move into our presentation. All right, let's get to it. Members, what we're covering today are the initial foundations for everything that we will discuss in this committee. During today's presentation, we're going to cover some of the basic terminology that you will hear repeatedly over the next several months. We'll provide everyone with background on the United States Census Bureau's role in the redistricting process, including where our data comes from. We'll discuss results of the 2020 census and what Florida looks like today, as well as be able to show you our very recently launched redistricting website. So, what is redistricting? Why are we doing it now? And what are we required to do? This slide will cover some terminology that are commonly used, and they are interchangeable, but there are some important distinctions that I'd like to point out between reapportionment and redistricting. Reapportionment or apportionment is the process of redistributing districts of a legislative body within a particular jurisdiction. Most commonly, this is the process used to establish how many seats there are in the United States House of Representatives for each of the 50 states. Redistricting is the process of drawing district boundaries, usually after a decennial census, to ensure that each district has equal population. The applicable federal law, we have Article 1, Section 4 of the United States Constitution, often referred to as the Elections Clause of the Constitution, and it's what gives authority for redistricting to each of the state's legislatures. The 14th Amendment is the Equal Protection Clause, and it has been interpreted to mean substantial equality of population among districts. Now, members, when talking about congressional districts, this means that the population of each district that we will achieve will be plus or minus one person. This is different from state legislative districts, where there is a general standard of a 10% population deviation range that the courts have deemed to be an acceptable range. We will go into this in a bit more detail in a few minutes. Section 2 of the Voting Rights Act establishes protections for majority-minority districts. Continuing on our discussion of federal law, Article 3, Section 16 of the Florida Constitution establishes that the overall timeline and gives authority for legislative redistricting in Florida to the legislature. It also has some very basic standards that we must follow. The Florida Constitution does not dictate a timeline for redistricting congressional boundaries. As a matter of tradition and efficiency, the legislature undertakes both the state legislative and congressional redistricting at the same time. State legislative boundaries are passed as a joint resolution. The congressional boundaries that our subcommittee will work on are passed as a bill. This means congressional maps go directly to the governor for signature, like any other bill, whereas House and Senate maps undergo a Florida Supreme Court review. We'll discuss this process further in a few slides. Continuing on Florida law, Article 3, Sections 20 and 21 of the Florida Constitution were added in 2010, and the bottom line is this. These two sections, are part of the Florida Constitution, and like with any other part of the Constitution, we have made an oath to follow them. Members, I want to underscore that. It's very important. I want this committee to be fully engaged, aware, and educated. And it's important to understand not only redistricting at a conceptual level, but the context of the legal guideposts, such as our constitutional standards, that we must follow. Within our first couple of interim committee meetings, we will thoroughly examine these standards. This decade, we have added the benefit of history and court precedent, something that the prior decade's members and staff did not. So we have a better understanding today than the legislature did 10 years ago about how we implement these standards. So let's take a look at the standards. The Florida Supreme Court has made it clear that the standards for redistricting have two distinct tiers. And I'd like to take a moment to read the Tier 1 and Tier 2 standards to you. Under Tier 1, no apportionment plan or individual district shall be drawn with the intent to favor or disfavor a political party or incumbent. Districts shall not be drawn with the intent or result of denying or abridging the equal opportunity of racial or language minorities to participate in the political process or diminish their ability to elect representatives of their choice. Districts shall consist of contiguous territory. under our Tier 2 standards. Districts shall be nearly equal in population as is practical. Districts shall be compact. Districts, where feasible, will utilize existing political and geographic boundaries. Tier 1 prohibits favoring or disfavoring any political party or incumbent. Tier 1 protects racial and language minority groups' ability to elect candidates of their choice using language similar to what is in Section 5 of the Voting Rights Act. Excuse me for one moment. Tier 2 provides that the districts be nearly as equal in population as practical, be compact, and follow existing geographical and political boundaries. As was mentioned on my previous slide, Tier 1 takes priority over Tier 2 standards in case of a conflict. And with each tier, the standards are equal amongst one another. Continuing on Florida law, these are other statutes that are relevant to this process. Chapter 8 defines the technical boundaries of congressional districts. Chapter 10 defines the technical boundaries of state, Senate, and House districts. And Chapter 11 of Florida statutes provides that the Florida legislature use the latest federal decennial census, statewide census, for the apportionment process. Now let's talk about our timeline for this process. What is shown here is important dates for what has already happened in this process, where we are now, and the important dates for what is to come in the future. As you can see, we are still in the middle of this process, and the bulk of our work is just beginning. If you look at the chart, and I apologize on the screen, it's a bit difficult to see here. But what we anticipate is we have the data now that we will need to proceed. We are on track to begin our work of analyzing maps through the committee process that we have during this interim committee week period, and we will take up work products during the regular session. So if you take a look at the slide, and I apologize that it is a little bit difficult to see, but what we're looking at now is the 2022 regular session, of course, convenes on January 11th, and that is our constitutional period to begin working on our product during session. Our goal is to have things completed by the 60th day of the regular session. So you'll note on your calendar here that this is all important in terms of our schedule because the candidate qualifying period begins on June 13th of 2022. So we have that kind of slide kind of helps you get a view of the schedule that we will have moving forward. Because Article 3, Section 16 of the Florida Constitution states that Florida will approve new districts in the second year after the decennial census, we're still on track to complete this process on time and on schedule, even given the delay in the state's receiving of the census data. I'd like to move on now to discuss the United States Census Bureau and provide a little bit more background on how this process plays in. First, we'll cover some terminology. The United States Census Bureau is charged with conducting the decennial census with the mission statement for the Bureau being count everyone once, only once, and in the right place for the census. The decennial census is the enumeration or complete count of every whole person, which is conducted every 10 years. Apportionment counts are the number of seats that each of the 50 states receives in the United States House of Representatives. Redistricting data. This is the PL data, referring to Public Law 94-171, which directs the Bureau to deliver to the states the product that contains summary statistics on population, demographics, and housing. Population counts for the total population and for the population 18 years of age and over are presented by race and by Hispanic or Latino origin, and for the total group quarters population by major group quarters type. We will specifically explore this item in a couple of slides. Continuing on federal law, Article 1, Section 2 of the United States Constitution. This is the section that requires the decennial census to be conducted and that the count of whole persons be an actual enumeration of those people. This means an actual count of every person. Title 13 establishes the United States Census Bureau as the agency that is to conduct the decennial census and requires them to provide the data accurately and in a manner that protects the privacy of those being counted. Public Law 94-171 directs the Bureau to deliver to the states the product that contains summary statistics on population, demographics, and housing. Population counts for the total population and for the population 18 years and over are presented by race and by Hispanic or Latino origin, and for the total group quarters population by major group quarters type. So how does the United States Census Bureau conduct the census? This is a sample image of the 2020 census form that was mailed out in the beginning of 2020. The first census was conducted in 1790 and is conducted every 10 years. The decennial census is the basis for reapportionment counts, federal funding allocation, and redistricting. The 2020 census is the 24th decennial census and first ever to be offered online. This was the first census, as I said, that allowed online responses. This greatly helped self-response rates, especially in light of the COVID-19 pandemic. Decennial census continued. 2020 presented unique challenges to us all, and the United States Census Bureau was no exception. You can see here that the whole process to conduct and tabulating the census results were delayed in 2020 due to COVID-19, wildfires, hurricanes, and other factors. I'm not going to walk through every item on this graphic, but we included it to illustrate the timeline challenges the Census Bureau faced last year. Their challenges did result in the delay of states receiving apportionment counts and redistricting data. And while that is unfortunate, these delays did not delay our timeline here in Florida. We are still on track and on schedule to complete our redistricting process during next year's regular session, which is what our Constitution instructs us to do, despite the delays from the United States Census Bureau. Continuing on the decennial census, Florida's total enumeration was consistent with the national average of 99.9% of the total households for which the Census Bureau has a record for, and they were counted in the 2020 census. As we also saw on the last slide, there are two main phases of data collection during a census: self-response rate and non-response follow-up. Self-response is an individual completing the census questionnaire on their own, whether by mail, phone, or online. Non-response follow-up is the Census Bureau going back into the communities and using administrative records to help complete the outstanding questionnaires. You'll sometimes hear this process referred to as imputation. What is reassuring is that Florida's total enumeration was 99.9%, and this means that the count here in Florida was in line with the national average's completeness. The self-response rate and non-response follow-up rates in Florida were consistent with other states and with the overall national average. Moving on into our apportionment counts. As we discussed before, Florida will be getting 28 congressional districts, one more than we had in 2010. This slide also shows you the ideal population for each district within each different type of map. For example, the ideal population is calculated by taking the 2020 population divided by the number of districts in the respective plan. These numbers are the guideposts for our districts as we begin drawing maps. And members, I'd like to point your attention to the slide under the 2020 count. You take the statewide population and divide it by 28, and that gives us our congressional district ideal population of 769,221 persons. Moving on, data from the United States Census Bureau. So now that we've talked about the Census Bureau's process, let's discuss the types of Census Bureau data that we will specifically use for redistricting. PL 94-171 redistricting data is a detailed population data set and the basis for us to analyze and draw district boundaries. The geography support products details the geographical landscape of Florida. The two buckets of data and the products work together to enable our redistricting process. Continuing on redistricting data, Public Law 94-171, redistricting data, or PL data for short, is broken down into different census geography layers, the smallest being called blocks. This is detailed population data that is grouped by total population and voting age population, and is then grouped by race and ethnic group. This data set also contains group quarters data. While this data is provided as part of the redistricting data, it has minimal involvement with the redistricting process. However, demographers and statisticians use this data for other analysis. The same data was delivered in a legacy format on August 12th, and the same data was then again delivered officially in a more user-friendly format just last week on September 16th. Continuing on redistricting data, the census questionnaire asks a variety of questions. However, there are two that are specifically important for the redistricting purposes. The first is question 8, which asks respondents to identify their ethnicity. This results in two categories, Hispanic or Latino and not Hispanic or Latino. Continuing on redistricting data, question 9 asks a respondent to identify their race, resulting in 6 categories. Members, you see them listed on the slide: American Indian or Alaska Native, Asian, Black or African American, Native Hawaiian or other Pacific Islander, white or other race. And if you look closely at the census questionnaire, you can see how the Census Bureau has provided some examples of what is contained within each of those racial categories. If a respondent selects multiple categories, using guidance from the United States Office of Management and Budget, they are counted in each racial category that they selected. You will see these categories again from questions 8 and 9 as we go through the software and understand the legal requirements, especially surrounding the protection of benchmark minority districts. Now that we've talked about how the population data is collected and how people can identify themselves, let's talk about geography. The geography support products are produced by the Census Bureau and essentially a breakdown of the landscape of Florida into different geographic units. These units are then used to draw districts. Census blocks are the smallest unit of geography defined by the United States Census Bureau. They range in size from individual parcels of land to city blocks to larger areas. Regardless of geographic size or population, they serve as the building blocks for the other units of geography. Now we'll take a closer look as the committee works through the map drawing application, and you'll be able to see firsthand how these units of geography and the associated population counts give us a detailed picture of Florida's population. Now, members, bear with me. I know we're diving in here and it's getting a little long, but we're working through it. We've covered a lot of terminology and baseline details. Now let's take a look at some of Florida's top line results from the 2020 census. Representative Fachusky, this is the part you were looking forward to. And these are some pretty cool slides too. You can see Florida's 67 counties and which ones grew in population. The darker the green indicates a greater percentage change in population. The lighter colored counties lost population when compared to the 2010 population counts. The counties with the biggest increases were mostly in the Central Florida area. Many of the more rural counties in Florida lost population, which was consistent with national trends. Members, this slide shows the counties with over 20% growth that we saw on the previous slide. So counties with over 20% growth include Osceola, St. John's, Sumter, Walton, Lake, Orange, Santa Rosa, Manatee, Nassau, Lee, Pasco, Flagler, and Polk County. Again, these are the counties with 20% growth. On the next slide, members, you will see counties that lost populations from what we saw on the previous slide. Those counties include Gulf, Hardy, Lafayette, Calhoun, Madison, Glades, Gadsden, Hamilton, Jackson, Liberty, Taylor, DeSoto, Jefferson, Putnam, Holmes, Okeechobee, and Bradford County. Members, on this slide, you will see Florida's top 10 largest counties as of 2020. They include Miami-Dade, Broward, Palm Beach, Hillsborough, Orange, Duval, Pinellas, Lee, Polk, and Brevard. As I said, these are the top 10 largest counties, and they're the same 10 counties as in the 2010 census. However, Duval overtook Pinellas County for the number 6 spot this decade. Members, this slide shows you Florida's top 10 smallest counties. These are the smallest counties in the state, also comprised of the same 10 counties as in 2010. These counties are Liberty, Lafayette, Glades, Franklin, Calhoun, Hamilton, Gulf, Jefferson, Union, and Dixie County. Members, Florida's municipalities, as of April 1st, 2020, Florida has 412 incorporated municipalities compared to 411 in the last decade. During the decade, Estero, Indiantown, and Westlake became incorporated. Hastings and Islandia became unincorporated. Although currently unincorporated, members, you may recall from last session, Wichita was still incorporated as an area in January 2020 when the United States Census Bureau finalized their geography support products, as well as on April 1st, 2020, when the 2020 census was conducted. Therefore, Wichita appears in this decade's census as an incorporated city. Yes, so, I'm sorry, Representative Benjamin, you wanted me to say Wichita one more time? Did you want to make a point of order? Did I pronounce that incorrectly? All right. We'll make sure that's noted in the record. Thank you very much. Members, moving on. This slide covers Florida's top 10 largest municipalities. These are the top 10 in Florida, and this decade, Cape Coral jumps into the top 10 after being ranked 11th in 2010. So our top 10 largest municipalities, Jacksonville, Miami, Tampa, Orlando, St. Petersburg, Hialeah, Port St. Lucie, Tallahassee, Cape Coral, and Fort Lauderdale. Members, this is a slide similar to the county slide, but shows how each house district has changed in population. The darker the green indicates larger percentage growth, again seeing notable growth depicted along the I-4 corridor. Members, this slide depicts Florida Senate districts. This shows a similar pattern as State House, but the slide is obviously at a less granular level. And lastly, the congressional districts. Again, members, the green indicates more population growth, and the lighter color indicates less population change. Now, members, you've heard enough from me. I'm excited and pleased to turn it over to Mr. Pareda to review our website with us. Mr. Pareda, you're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And now, with the help of Kyle, we'll go through the website, which was launched yesterday afternoon. And I'm sure you guys have seen on Twitter and news articles that it was launched, and maybe you've even checked it out on your own. But we'll demonstrate it here in committee so you can see it more closely. So first, this is a joint website that the Florida Senate and Florida House constructed together to put out to be a repository for all the important redistricting data and information that will be used throughout this process. The Florida House and the Florida Senate have elected to use Esri as a vendor for this website and for our redistricting application, which will be a part of this website and available to everyone in the state. So, Kyle, if you want to click on the website. So, here you go. This is the homepage of Florida Redistricting. The first thing I want to note is that we have embedded the Google Translate feature into the website. So with this button right here, you can translate the website into any language or whatever your native language happens to be. So it'll be all the information will be available to everyone and however they want to see it. So here, this is the homepage with an introduction to the Florida redistricting. And everything that else that is available on the website. Part of the reason why we selected going with the Esri vendor is it enabled us to really make this website an incredibly interactive and powerful tool for everyone in the state to view data and to analyze the state. So here in this window right here, if you click Explore, this will let anyone in the public see interactive maps, very similar to the slides that Chair Saroy just demonstrated to you before, by all of the three different district maps in Florida. And what is displayed here is a little bit different than the percentage population growth slides that we showed. This is an over-under, the ideal population for each district based on the total number of districts in the map. And you can zoom into these districts and move around and get really, really detailed if you want. And that's a very powerful tool for analyzing the state. And as Kyle just did, if you clicked on each of the districts, it'll show you what the ideal population is, what the current total population based on the 2010 or 2020 census, and its deviation from that ideal with a percentage. Scroll down a little bit more, Kyle. Okay, and at the bottom here, you'll see contacts and everything else. So go up to the About tab. So here on the About tab, this will go through some of the terminology that we went through today in today's presentation, including some Florida Fast Facts that we'll have that slide there so everyone can see what the total state population is, what it was in 2010, what it is now, and the differences, along with all of those different ideal populations. It also has a lot of information on the Voting Rights Act and all of the other pertinent information, a lot of which we went through in the slides today. It also has some buttons for the process in general, so everyone can know what we're going through and the timeline that we also presented today. And those are available on the website for everyone to see. So everyone has all the information about what we're doing and how we're doing it and when we're doing it. Then there's a tab for each committee. This is the tab for the House website, and you can see there our redistricting committee, and as you scroll down, you'll see all of the subcommittees displayed beneath that. And beneath each of that, there's link back to our subcommittee webpage on myfloridahouse.gov, along with all the member pages, all of the publications that we'll be making throughout throughout the committee process, as well as a link to watch the videos of all of our committee presentations on there. So it is accessible all in a single place for anyone to see and have all that information. There's also some buttons down below with any additional memos or correspondence that we put out as a committee or perhaps the House puts out in general. There's the same link that's available on myfloridahouse.gov to find your elected officials. We've placed that here. You can track bills, including all of the redistricting bills once they get filed. And also, if some people want to appear in committee and want to fill out a notice online, we put that link down there as well. Down below, it's all the important dates, so all of our committee meetings or whatever other important dates go on throughout the process that also links back to myfloridahouse.gov. The Senate committee page is very similar to the House page, but since this is a joint process and a joint website that we're going through, the maps, just like any other piece of legislation, need to pass through both chambers. So we were very fortunate to work with our Senate partners on this website and getting all the information for redistricting in the same place so that there isn't two separate websites, one for the House, one for the Senate. Everything is all in the same place. And they have very similar access to the Senate committee pages and Senate website as we have for the House. Now on the Resources tab, this is an exciting place here on the website that has access to a lot of information. You see these three buttons here. These will bring up what Esri calls story maps. And if you click on each of those, we actually have it up in another tab because it sometimes takes a little bit of time to load. If you bring that up, this will bring up a story map so you can go through all of the districts, and as you scroll down, it actually goes through all the maps and will update in real time. There's even a box to kind of describe why that map was passed or what the circumstances were behind that map being passed. And as you scroll down, you can see the districts change, and you can go all the way back to the 1980s when Florida switched to single-member districts. And you can even, on that map, Kyle, you can scroll down through all the different decades, but you can even zoom out or zoom in so you can see a greater level of detail, whatever districts you want to take a look at. That's a really exciting and powerful tool. Below that, we have all of the redistricting terminology and glossary, some of which the chairman went over today, as well as the Census Bureau's geography hierarchy and other information as well. And then below, we have links to the actual census websites, along with the Florida Division of Elections, since both of those sources are where all of the data that is important to this process get collected. On the Get Involved tab, now this is the page that probably a lot of people, especially people in the public and yourself here in the chamber, are interested. This is how people can get involved with the process, and it includes a link to our map drawing application that anyone in the public can click there. It's the same software that'll be available to anyone in the public, members here in this committee and all of our other committees, or anyone in the House, along with all of the staff. This is the same product that we'll be using across the board. There's also a redistricting suggestion form. If people don't want to or can't click on the redistricting software and draw an actual map, there's a form so they can submit a suggestion to us in writing. There's also a quick start guide and a help manual to get started with the drawing application. To guide people along the way and kind of get them started drawing their own maps. And below that, there's even some tutorial videos that we've produced to, if people don't want to read the help manual and they want something a little bit more visual, there's a way here to help get them started. And then finally, on the Contact Us page, you can see we actually have a joint email address that goes to both chambers for the public when they want help, so they don't have to worry about contacting the House Committee or the Senate Committee, you're getting different information. We've created a central place where all of those help questions can go. And that is the website. And actually, the website is linked now on the homepage of myfloridahouse.gov, so you can access the website individually. But if you scroll down, you can see there's a new button right on the homepage for Florida redistricting. So it is accessible to everyone. There's also a separate button for members available in Legis that will bring you to the map drawing application and portal, simply because that you all are more used to using Legis to file bills and whatnot, so that button is there available in the software. And that's it, Mr. Chairman.
All right. Thank you very much for the presentation. I think that website is going to be a remarkable tool for all of us and for our fellow Floridians as well. Members, are there any questions? All right, yes. Yep. We have one public comment. Moving into public comments, Richard Templin, Florida AFL-CIO. Is there anybody else from the audience wishing to provide public comment? Hearing none, thank you very much. Members, I want to thank you for your time this morning. Ranking Member Skidmore, I'd like to invite you to offer some remarks if you would like.
Thank you so much, Mr. Chair. I'm grateful to the speaker to be appointed as a ranking member to this committee and honored to be working with you, Chair Leak and Chair Byrd and our Senate partners. I think this is going to be the most exciting of the committees because we have the challenge of adding the new seat and the guardrails of, you know, plus or minus just one person for each congressional seat. So these are some really exciting opportunities for us. On behalf of the Democratic Caucus, we're looking forward to fully participating and reaching and achieving the goal of fair and legal districts at the end of the process, and looking forward to the next few months of working with you. So thank you so much.
Thank you very much, Ranking Member, and look forward to working with you as well. Members, I hope you found today's materials educational and a solid first step on our journey. A quick housekeeping note regarding the map drawing application that was launched yesterday. Committee staff will be reaching out over the next couple of days to provide you with your pre-registered login credentials. I encourage you to take time to explore our new website and familiarize yourself with our map drawing application. Also, keep your eyes open for an email about an upcoming Legislator University for additional training on the map drawing application. Members, thank you very much for your time this morning. This concludes our meeting agenda for today. Representative Benjamin moves that we rise. Unless there's an objection, the meeting is adjourned.